high fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Welcome to another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea. I'm joined once again by Tish Hamilton. Hello, Tish.
Hi, Sarah. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. So I had kind of an extendo spring break. I might have mentioned that my BFF, Chalkley, with an unusual first name, she and her daughter, Tallulah, they live in Brooklyn. She's the one who, Tish, have you ever seen our Brantham, the AMR video that kind of tells like what AMR is all about? Have we ever sent you that? If not, I need to.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll include a link to it in the show notes. So Chalkley is many things. We know each other from Walking Magazine way back in the day. She was she's a graphic designer, but she's also a documentary filmmaker. And so she loves to have subjects that she can kind of dial in and find out what they're all about. So she made a brand anthem video about AMR last year. And so she and her daughter come out every spring break. This is the sixth spring break in a row that they have come out from Brooklyn to stay with us for their spring break. She is an only parent, and we just have the best time.
That is so cool. How old is her daughter?
So her daughter is the same age as Phoebe, my older daughter. They're about 8 months apart. And they are just great friends. And Tallulah also adores the twins. She and John really actually have quite a bond. They joke that they'll either be roommates in New York City one day or travel Europe together. And so they come out, and then every year I splurge and take us away for a night to a different part of Oregon. Chalkley and me and the kids, and Jack stays home and holds down the home front. And so we went to this place called Enchanted Forest that is just the goofiest, most wonderful homespun, and Alex is totally like smiling with such a wonderful like knowing look on his face. It's about an hour south of here, and it is run by this one family, and it was one man's vision, and it is this magical, enchanted forest that is like an amusement park kind of, but they have very few rides, but it's all built onto this hillside right off of I-5, the major, you know, freeway that goes down the West Coast. It's like a storybook land. So there's all these attractions that are built into the, you know, amidst the moss covered trees. And, you know, so there's Alice in Wonderland. There is the this huge mine thing that is like where the seven dwarves went off to work. And it's just like lights and features, and it's all made out of cement, and it is just kooky.
That sounds really awesome, Sarah. And I love this idea that your best friend comes out year after year to visit you. And I want to I thank you on behalf of all single mothers everywhere. You were telling me that she came out, and I was thinking about to my own, you know, I had my own unexpected divorce when my daughter was in first grade, and my friends totally saved me. I had a triathlete friend who invited me up to her house in Lake Placid to ski, and then to go back in the summer to swim. Uh-huh. And I had that's Lori, and my friend Yashane, a runner, who invited me to come down to the beach for a week and travel with me internationally for a week. So, you know, my friends and their kids really saved us. So I love this idea that you have a friend who comes back year after year to Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool.
It's just a special time. I also think it's special for kids to see their mothers or their parents as humans who, you know, get kind of bawdy at times, you know, laugh a lot, you know, just really bond with someone. And that, you know, it's not just, I'm not just this person who works and runs and cooks dinner, you know, but I mean, My kids just kind of sometimes look at me because Chocolate and I can just almost fall to the floor laughing over things. So
right. you're more than just a mom machine.
I am more than just a mom machine.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm sad that was over. They were here from Tuesday evening until super duper early Monday, and I miss them so much now. So, yeah, yeah, and we get to see them then. Typically, they come out to visit us when I go to my parents' house in Connecticut. They, you know, take a day trip out there, and we are actually debating going in and spending the night in Brooklyn with them. So,
totally should do that.
Yeah, for all the it's sort of embarrassing for all the times my kids have been to Southern Connecticut, they've never been into the city.
So, yeah, you gotta do that.
I know. There's this mother runner, Michelle, who lives in Rhode Island, and I remember last year she took her three boys into New York for a couple days, and I was like, oh my gosh, like I could do that.
we live just about an hour, you know, a little over an hour train ride outside of New York, and we've even gone in and stayed in a hotel overnight over spring break.
Because it is different when you have a home base, you know, if nothing else, you have someplace to go to the bathroom, you know, like, put your bags down, you know, take a load off your feet.
We had a lot of fun. We stayed in this really cool, tiny boutique hotel on the Lower East Side. And just, you know, you just get to feel like you live in New York for a couple of days and then you don't have to.
Right.
Back home.
and walk barefoot over grass and So I say you and I start talking about amongst each other, just the two of us, about what our topic is, which is the rest of the show is all about the venerable Boston Marathon, which is happening for the 122nd time on Monday, April 16. We're going to be joined one after another by four mother runners, all of whom are taking part in the event in one way or another. But you and I have both been to Boston. We've had our own adventures and we've seen each other there. I remember our brunch that we had the day before the 2012 Boston Marathon when it was so bleeping hot. And since you worked for Runner's World at the time, you had the luxury of knowing that you would be back the next year. And so you were able to defer your entry that year. And I'm like, nope, I'm here from the West Coast. I got here. I got to run it.
Well, just for the record, my deferring had nothing to do with where I worked.
Oh,
it may have something to do with where I live and that it's easier to drive up there for
sure.
Right,
sure. That's true. Yeah.
But deferral was offered to anyone who wanted to take a pass. And I did go back the following year, but I also did requalify to go back.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Just for the record. Yeah. And I also meant that I didn't mean to cause confusion by that. I meant that, you know, you were pretty certain that your work would once again plant you in Boston for that weekend. Whereas I was like, yeah, no, it cost me a whole bunch of money and time to get here. So I just had to take what Mother Nature doled out to me. It was. But so you have started 13 Boston marathons. That is, my running hat is off to you, Tish Hamilton.
Well, thank you. How many times have you run Boston, Sarah?
Twice. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And you came, the second time you ran was not as hot, I hope.
It was not as hot. It was 2016. It was still overly warm.
You know, that is definitely one of the challenges of Boston. It's pretty much always on the warmer side. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Except when it's like cold and rainy, which it looks like it might be this year.
I don't think it's not going to be. I mean, it's not cold, right? Mm. So Alex Hutchinson, our previous guest on your podcast, has cited research that says that 43 degrees is actually the perfect marathon temperature. Oh. And it's never that chilly in Boston. Mm-hmm. It definitely going to not be pleasant if it's pouring rain all day, but not freezing cold.
Yeah. So what is kind of your favorite Boston Marathon memory, Tish?
My favorite Boston Marathon memory. Holy crow.
Buy yourself some time and repeat the question.
I have have no idea. What's your favorite Boston Marathon memory?
Running down Boylston Street the first time. It just, I mean, that's the finish chute, so to speak. It's the, I don't know, what do you think that is? A tenth of a mile down Boylston Street, maybe?
Oh, it's longer. It's you pass the 26-mile mark while you're on Boylston.
Oh, okay. All right, okay. And yeah. Just, I mean, just the throngs of spectators and the noise and the energy and the, oh my goodness, that, you know, and you can't see it before you get there because you've turned, made that, you know, kind of last zig and then zag. And oh my goodness, I just was elated and just, it had been so hot that year. And I just, you know, took my energy and, you know, windmilled my arms to whip up the crowd. And, you know, I mean, it felt like people were like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll cheer, you know, we've been cheering for a while, but we'll cheer for this crazy lady.
That's so fun. Yeah. I have run it, been in it 13 times, but it's been over a long period of years. My first Boston was in 93. I know, it's so like 100 years ago. I'm dating myself.
You were a mere child back then. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. It's amazing they let a 7-year-old in. So I've run in all kinds of conditions, although not pouring rain, sorry guys. Uh-huh. And never very cold, but you know, over the years I've run with different friends and in different stages of fitness, uh-huh, right? Uh-huh. And in the first few years, if you can believe this, it was before chip timing.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and they had one mass start at noon. Mm-hmm. And because I was someone who always, you know, just barely qualified, I was always in the way, way, way back. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it took a good long while to get across the start line. Yeah. And your time was your time. You know, it was just it was a gun time. It wasn't a chip time. Yeah. So if it took you 10 or 15 minutes to get over the start line, oh, well.
Oh, my gosh. Well, one other memory that jumps out for me was in that same, the 2012 one. I'm completely blanking on the names of the father-son who he pushes his son, his adult.
Yeah.
What is
Hoyt?
Hoyts. Thank you. Team Hoyt. Yes. And so I was maybe on the second Newton Hill and maybe even I don't know. It might have been Heartbreak. And I saw them right at the base. And I ended up passing them because I was not pushing a adult in a you know, specially modified stroller. Right. and oh my gosh, and the crowd just went crazy for it, and I just burst into tears. I mean, it was so moving to see him and to see the two of them.
Yeah.
And oh, the dedication between that father and son is just a beautiful, beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, and you know, you were able to pass him then, but for many, many years, he was running marathons in the 3-hour range.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Which is just astonishing.
Oh, I know, because Boston made him qualify. He didn't get any special pass.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's right.
I mean, oh, my goodness. So, so that was really a standout memory. So, 2016 was just a kind of a hot blur of race. I don't know. So you're not going to be spectating. You're not going up to Boston to watch, are you?
No, I'm not, but I'll be watching on TV.
Right.
I was there in 2016 also, actually, now that you mentioned it. I had to look at my notes. I can't remember anymore.
So you ran it that year? Do you remember how
well? Oh, it was I do remember. It's very memorable. It's probably my worst Boston memory. It was so bleep and hot,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
Mm. It was one of my slowest marathons ever. Mm-hmm. I had been sick with bronchitis, nothing, you know, earth shattering, but had taken, you know, weeks away from training. And I had just come back and went ahead and finished, but it wasn't fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really liked it because the wind shifted about for me halfway through. And so there was a, what I felt was a gentle breeze coming from the coast. And so that sort of cooled things down. But it was so funny, you know, here I am 5'11". I don't know, at the time I was close to 170. And and so I was very much appreciative of the breeze. And I've since met this just little slip of a runner. And she was like, oh, the second half of that race was so windy. Oh, I just had to push through it the whole time. And I'm like, oh, okay. I really didn't notice that it was a detriment.
Yeah. You know, you probably didn't notice there were a bunch of people drafting behind you, too.
Right. Get behind the big girl. Go. Look.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I forgot that I can watch it. The timing of it is not great out here on the West Coast. It is.
Oh, that's right.
You know, as a mom, you know, that like I'm getting
really early.
Yeah, I'm getting, you know, I guess I could like prop my computer up in the kitchen. We don't have a TV in the kitchen. And you know, so and oftentimes out here, it's not on real TV. So you do have to only watch it online. And so I'm making lunches, I'm driving carpool, you know, it's Monday. Right. So I got to go to the supermarket after I drop the kids off. And so then I get home and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, well, I guess I missed all the fasties running it. So, yeah.
Well, you know, a really fun thing to do is to follow along on Twitter. Mm. And the commentary, it's really exciting. I've actually air quote watched the New York City Marathon that way, sitting in the ShopRite parking lot at our local grocery store. We had to go grocery shopping, but that was so exciting when Shalane Flanagan was winning, and it just refresh.
Wow. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, Tish, well, let's move on to our guests, some other ladies. So our first Boston Marathon guest is Jessie Blondin, a Canadian mother runner of two who is returning to run Boston after running the race last year. And this year, Jessie is running with her best running friend. Welcome, Jessie.
Hi, Sarah and Tish. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. So for starters, let's talk about your kids for a sec. How old are they? And word on the street is your daughter will turn another year older while you're in Boston for the race.
She will. So my daughter will be turning 7 on Sunday before Marathon Monday. Uh-huh. So unfortunately, this means just about every year her birthday falls on marathon weekend. And then I have a son who's almost 4.
Oh, my goodness. So not great birthing timing on your part in terms of for Boston.
I wasn't thinking that far ahead.
Yeah. Where are your priorities, Jessie? Come on.
Exactly.
So, Jessie, you're going back to Boston. You ran it last year. Can you tell us about your evolution as a runner?
Sure. So I've been running for about a decade. And when I ran my first marathon in 2007, and I ran at that time 4:15. So Boston, qualifying for Boston seemed like a very far away goal. But bit by bit, I chipped away and it started to get closer. And just as I was feeling like it was in within reach, they reduced the qualifying times again. So it seemed further away. But after 10 years and 6 marathons, I qualified for the first time in 2016 to run last year's Boston Marathon in 2017. So it was really, a goal that had been 10 years in the making, and the experience that I had last year more than met my expectations. It really was a dream come true, and I'm super excited to go back again this year.
Wow. Cool. Now, so Sarah tells me you log your miles running to and from work. So what do you do and how is that possible?
Yeah. So before I had kids and when I only had one kid, I used to wake up early and run before my day started. But when I had 2 kids and I returned to work, my kids started waking up really early. So it wasn't possible for me to get out, do a run and get back before they'd wake up at, 5 or 5:30 in the morning. So right. I started combining my commute to work with running. So what I do is everyone's always curious about the logistics. One day a week, I drive into the office and I bring 5 lunches for the week, 5 wow. sets of snacks, and 5 changes of clothes, which I then stash in my office. And then most days the rest of the week, I run to and from work. So I found that it's worked really well in terms of being able to combine, something that I want to do with something that I have to do anyway. And as well, it's a really nice sort of mental break between, the chaos of the morning routine and then settling into work and then again, the transition back home.
Yeah, that's genius. So how far of a run is it to your office?
It's about 7.5 kilometers, so not quite 5 miles.
Wow. That's so cool. And what kind of work do you do?
I work for the federal government.
Wow. Awesome. I love that solution. That's really cool.
And do you run the same route to and from?
I pretty much do. I don't actually take the most direct route, which sort of goes through a lot of, you know, traffic, sort of downtown areas. Instead, we have a great multi-use path here that goes along the canal that we have. So I try and maximize that as much as possible because it's much more relaxing, more scenic. And then I hop onto another bike path that sort of runs parallel to a commuter train that we have. So I mostly take that route just because it it minimizes the traffic signals, which makes it a bit faster, but it also gets out of the traffic and sort of the hustle and bustle.
So then, and if you have to, let's say your training plan, I don't know, calls for, you know, speed work or something like that, do you do it on the way to work or the way home from work?
Yeah, so I do, during the winter, I do one training session a week at an indoor track with a racing team that I train with. But when I have to fit in a tempo work or an interval work, I combine it usually with my morning commute. So I'm nice and fresh. And so I warm up till I get onto the path. And then I do the workout as I go and then try and cool down as I get to the office. And I've also been known sometimes to add in a long run. Maybe if I have weekend plans, I'll do a long run before work on Friday. So I'll add on some mileage and then do my regular commute into the office.
Wow. Wow. And I promise we'll move on to other topics, but I do have to ask, like, how often do you bail and be like, you know, take public transportation home, you know, get a ride from somebody, like, or is it like, nope, always to and from?
It's pretty much always to and from. We've had this, so living in Canada, we have had a rough winter here, and there's been a few days where we've gotten freezing rain or snow falling through the day, and I've sort of been watching the weather, and you know, there's been a couple times where I've had to leave early to avoid a really bad, you know, flash freeze, but otherwise, you know, once I'm at work, I need to get home, so I just put on the shoes and head out.
Oh my goodness. And you wear a different, so you wear a different outfit home. Then you, like, you don't,
no,
just...
I wear the same outfit. So I have a coat rack in my office where I hang my clothes during the day and apologize profusely to my colleagues.
Yeah, I'm also impressed with the organizational ability to get five lunches five snacks. I mean, I would work my way through that in a day or two. I mean, like, okay,
honestly, the logistics are the hardest part, and it's taken, I've been doing it for about 3 years now, and so I've sort of refined a system, and in fact now I find it easier because I'm not packing my lunch every day. I only have to think about it on Sunday nights, and so I don't have to think about my clothes in the morning. I don't think about what I'm going to eat. It's all packed, it's done once, and then it's ready to go.
Wow. But also, I mean, I think about, yeah, I haven't worked in an office in a million years, but I think about, you know, the whole logistics of the office refrigerator and people like raiding your stuff. And so do you ever get, by like Wednesday, someone's eaten the nice pasta salad you made for your lunch and someone else, you know, has scarfed up the turkey sandwich?
I haven't had that problem so far.
She works for the Canadian government, of course. That's not. True. They had more things. They bring stuff in for you. And it's free.
Yeah, no. I do take up on Monday. It is about half a shelf that I take up. So I'm sure I get some side eye from people who are also trying to find space for their lunches in the fridge or freezer.
You need to work for a startup, you know, like a .com, because then all the food would be there and free, you know? So,
yes,
you know.
I have thought that before.
Mm-hmm. I mean, please. I mean, it's Kind Bars as far as the eye can see, you know? And Sun Chips. So all right. So you mentioned the team that you run with. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. So for the last 2 years, I've been running with a group here called the OAC Racing Team, and it's a women's running team made up of women of all ages. So we have people who are recent graduates from university running programs, all the way up through some really experienced and advanced master's runners. So we train together. A couple of times a week, we do some indoor speed work at the track, which lets us get a really quality workout in, even when it's icy and snowy outside. And then people often get together for other workouts throughout the week. So it's been a great addition to my training, having people to push me in those workouts and support each other. Even though we're, you know, we vary in speed, it's been a really, really positive experience.
And are you traveling to Boston with a friend from that team?
No, so I'm traveling to Boston with my best running friend, Allison. So she's a fellow mother runner. I've known her for, you know, over 10 years, and our kids are similar age and have grown up together. And so she's the person who I do all my long runs with on Saturday morning. So we get up very early on Saturday mornings, and we meet halfway between our houses to do our long runs. And then we know that we need to finish early because we've got to get back to get our kids off to musical theater or sport classes, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so this time she ran it in Boston in 2016, and I ran it in 2017. And then in 2016, in the fall, we both qualified for this upcoming Boston. So we're going to be traveling together and having a great time.
Mm. Yeah, that's so much fun. It's so much fun to experience it with a friend. And I'm curious, are you going to actually run together, or are you going to be doing your own races?
I think we're going to be doing our own races. We did the race that we qualified together. We started together, and then we separated about halfway. But we both have different goals for this race, so I think we're going to go separately.
I think that's a smart move. And so what is your goal?
Yeah, so I feel like I've trained to set a personal best. We'll see what the conditions are on the day. So I'd like to be under 3.5 hours. But, you know, with the rain being forecast right now and the wind, it's sort of hard to say what the day will play. But mostly I just want to have a strong race and really enjoy the experience again.
And how about Allison? What's her goal?
I think she wants to come in somewhere around 3:45.
Okay. Okay. Because what was your all's qualifying time? Like, what did you have to be?
She's a little bit older than me. So I think I ran 3:33 to qualify for this one. Mm-hmm. And I think she ran around 3:39.
Okay. Well,
yeah, her age has its advantage.
Yes. Yes, it does. It looks like yoga is an important part of your training.
It is. I've recently been able to incorporate more cross training and yoga into my training. I think, you know, in the past, I really thought I had to be doing 90-minute long yoga classes or, you know, an hour at the gym to do cross training. And over the last year, I've really embraced this idea that something is better than nothing. So mm-hmm. I use online videos through the site Jazz Yoga, some people might have heard of, and they have videos that range from 5 minutes to 35 minutes. And so I can try and do those. I fit them in at different parts of the day, whether that's my making breakfast for my kids or after they've gone to bed, I fit in a few minutes of yoga. And the same thing with strength training, whether it's 10 minutes during my lunch break or a couple of minutes after a run. And I found those little bits really add up, and they've mm-hmm. helped to keep me healthy with the mileage and getting me to the starting line in good shape.
Nice. So no yoga in the office, you know, after you get there, after your almost 5 mile run there.
Well, I'm really lucky that I actually have a gym here. So I am able to do some stretching or some yoga if I need to after I get here, unless I have a meeting starting as soon as I arrive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's an important question that people might be wondering. Do you take a shower then before the workday?
I usually do. So as I said, I'm lucky enough to have a shower. So when I have time, I do take a shower, but sometimes if my husband's traveling for work, for example, I'm very crunched for time in the morning. And so I have a little mm-hmm. trick. It's called the pre-shower. So what I actually do is I take a shower before I leave the house for my run. And so my hair is still wet. And then when mm-hmm. I arrive to work, I haven't sweat too much, and I can sort of brush the hair up and just put on a change of clothes, and I'm good for the day.
But does that even work in the summertime?
It's not as good in the summer, more effective in the winter. Yeah. But in the morning, you don't, it's not as warm. Uh-huh. Definitely by the end of the day, I am sweaty.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Because
this is the benefit of living in Canada.
Exactly.
You don't have as much warm time to deal with. Right.
You get free healthcare and you don't sweat as much when you work out. It's great.
Right. Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Well, Jesse, we will be thinking about you on Monday. Have a great race.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Our next guest is Suzanne Adams. She's run the Boston Marathon twice, but this year she's volunteering at the information booth at the expo instead of running. In addition, she helps coordinate a team of charity runners. Thanks for joining us, Suzanne.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about your family and whether you work outside the home or not.
So I'm a mom of two young boys. I have a 5.5-year-old son and a 22-year-old-month son. I do work full-time. I am the director of development communications for Spalding Rehab Hospital in Boston.
Cool. So, Suzanne, you have run Boston twice, right?
I have. I ran in 2009 for Spalding Rehab Hospital. The first time I ran actually was on a dare from a friend of mine. I had never really run more than 3 miles prior. And we were sort of that post-college trying to figure out how to get back in shape mentality. And so we ran a 5K, and she and I one day were sitting actually on the beach one summer, and she said, "You know, what about ever running a marathon?" And I said, "You're crazy." And then she applied to be a member of Spalding's team. And on her application, it said she's training with Suzanne, you know, training with me. And so my coworkers came in and they said, "You know, Sarah's application came through and it says she's training with you." And I said, "Oh, really? That's funny." And so, you know, I applied and put my application in, and, you know, my colleague at the time came into my office and she said, "I don't know if this is congratulations or good luck, but, you know, welcome to the team." And so, you know, I started training. So it was the first, Boston was my first marathon. And as I said, I ran to fundraise for Spalding. And then we all obviously know about the events that happened in 2013. And as you mentioned, I helped to coordinate a charity team for Spalding. And our event is at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel. So we were there waiting for our runners to finish, my husband included. He was on the course at the time. And my parents actually volunteer at the finish line. And, you know, the bombs both went off. I was across the street from the second one, and my husband was on Hereford Street, you know, and we sort of go through the motions of that day. And so, fast forward, as I said, I work for Spalding Rehab Hospital, and we treated 32 of the most catastrophically injured survivors. And so when time came in September to really select our team, a few of us who had been at the Mandarin, and I actually swore I would never run Boston again, said, "You know what, we need to do this." So I did run again in 2014, and really used it as sort of to honor the survivors and everything and the care that they received at Spalding and all the patients that we care for on an annual basis. Yeah. So I don't think I'll do it again, but it comes up all the time. Somebody says, "You're gonna, you know," but, you know, I like being on the other side now.
So, and when you say you swore you would never run Boston again, you meant after 2009, or do you mean after what you witnessed in 2013?
After 2009, I said, you know, Boston is just its own beast. You know, the training. I live here in Boston. The weather is unpredictable, as we all know, and the winters can be really tough. And so you know, I wanted to really, I've run six other marathons in the fall, which is a great time to run a marathon. And, you know, I think it was one of those situations. I was sort of just checking it off my bucket list. But 2014 was really a special year to be out there on the course.
Wow. So you mentioned you were talking about Spalding Rehab, so I mean, how do you feel that it does, how does that connection to the 2013 aftermath and the ongoing treatment, I'm sure for many people, I mean, how do you feel that kind of colors your the way you look at your training and the race itself?
Absolutely. You know, I think Spalding and the Boston Marathon and the Marathon Survivors and the Boston Athletic Association will forever be tied because of those events. And, you know, those survivors, their perseverance is unbelievable. You know, many of them come back to the hospital. Many of them are coming back to this hospital as we approach the 5-year anniversary, you know, to come and visit and thank those caregivers and really show the spirit of the city. And I think, you know, for Spalding, we actually were also opening a brand new hospital at the time as well. So actually 13 days following the marathon bombings, we actually opened a brand new facility. And some of the first patients at this facility were these marathon survivors. And so for us, you know, the marathon is a huge part of what we do. We now, back in 2013, we had 25 runners out on the course that day. And this year, and since then, our marathon team has grown exponentially. And so this year we'll have 77 runners. runners out on the course. And, you know, they're set on course to raise about $600,000 for the hospital. And it's really amazing. And I think, you know, it's sort of one of those situations that, you know, we all will remember where we were that day. And, you know, we all look back, but to know how far those survivors have come and what they're doing now is just, it's really remarkable.
Suzanne, that's a really, that is remarkable. It's a great story. As it happens, in 2013, I was right where you were, in front of the Mandarin Hotel. I was on Boylston, right behind the second bombs as well, and running. And you know, obviously I left the course. But I came back in 2014. And one thing I would say about being there in 2014, it was such a great experience. Like there were so many, you know, there's always terrific support at Boston, but there were so many people out there, you know, doing the whole Boston Strong thing. And when we finished, we were walking through the hallway of the Prudential Center, going back to our hotel room, and everybody was like cheering for us. It was just, it was like, so it was exponentially exciting and moving and, you know, chill bumps kind of situation.
Absolutely. And it turns out, you know, 2014 was a picture perfect weather day as well, which is not in the cards, it looks like right now. But, you know, so it was a beautiful sunny day. The spectators were, you know, 10 deep that day from Hopkinton all the way down to Boston. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got into Kenmore Square and it was amazing. And so it's true. And I think that momentum has continued. I think the, you know, the Boston Marathon has always been really special to people who, you know, grown up here. I grew up going with my parents and sitting at the top of Heartbreak Hill and all of that. But I think, you know, ever since the events of 2013, the marathon is just part of everything that goes on here.
Yeah, that's really cool. So you're volunteering this year. Are you volunteering with your Spalding group?
Both. So I, you know, because I have spare time, right? our team has been, you know, doing the 18 weeks trainings. We do training runs, we do socials, we do events. So we'll have a big event on Sunday, pre-race event, kickoff event, and then a big event on Monday back at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel. So I volunteer at the information table at the expo, and I got an email today earlier saying that about 19,000 of the runners this year will run Boston for the first time. So this will be completely new to them. And so being from the city, I've been doing this for about 3 years. It's nice to sort of pass on my knowledge about best restaurants to go to, how to navigate the T, you know, where's the family meeting area. So we answer questions. I'll answer questions for about 6 hours straight. I'll be there Friday morning. You know, they say we may be one of the only, you know, contacts that they have. And so we're sort of an extension of the staff, because the staff for the Boston Athletic Association is very small. Mm-hmm. And so we answer a lot of questions about busing that morning, you know, any sort of that burning question. We actually answer a lot of questions also for the family, because the family tends to be a little bit nervous than the runner. The runner knows what they're going to do. They're going to, you know, they're going to go to the common, they're going to take the bus. The bus is going to get them to Hopkinton, and they're going to run 26 miles back. The family, I sometimes want to give them my cell phone number and be like, it's going to be okay. Because the questions they ask, and, you know, and it's a point to point race. And so, you know, they try to say, well, can I see them on the course? Sure, if you're willing to navigate the train and let me tell you exactly how to do that. But you and, you know, 40,000 other people are trying to do the exact same thing that day on the green line. You know, can I get to the finish line? No, unfortunately, you can't. This is how close you can get. Where's the best place to meet my family? You know, those sort of questions. And so we spend a lot. I spend about 6 hours answering the same question over and over again.
So
that sounds like an endurance event in itself, an exhausting endurance event.
It is. But I have to say, it's so much fun because, like I said, most of these runners are coming to Boston for the first time, and they're excited and they're nervous. Uh-huh. You know, they've either all qualified to run or they've raised a lot of money for charity. And so, you know, I always start with, like, you know what, first of all, congratulations to even making it this far. And it's nice because I have, you know, I've run it myself as well. So I have sort of, I know what they're feeling. I know exactly what they're going through. So I can sort of try to calm their nerves.
So, and please tell me you don't send all the family members to the exact same spot. Like, I can see they'll all going to be standing there. Oh, did Suzanne tell you to be here? Because there's way too many of us here. Like,
well, it's funny because there really is only a few locations that you can get to. And you always say, well, do you have a car? And they're like, no. And you're like, okay. And so I'm like, well, you're going to take the Green Line to the Woodland Tea Stop. And so I always laugh. I'm like, someday I'm actually going to do this and see how many thousands of people are there.
Or just like give them, put it like stamps on the back of their hand and then be like, can I have a show of hands, please? Thank you. Yes, all of you are here because of me.
I sent you all to the same spot. And it's not just me. It's all the other same volunteers. I listened. There's about 10 of us that work the shifts at the same time. And we all send them the exact same place. It's hysterical. So,
right.
But yeah, I mean, you try to give them the best vantage point. And, you know, my it's amazing. Like I was saying, because it's a point to point, and it's not, you know, so you really can only pick one spot unless you truly know the city and, you know, the ins and outs of the different communities. It's really hard to do it any other way.
Because couldn't they also, they could take the commuter line out to like Wellesley Farms and get to 16 from there. It's such a short walk.
Or Natick. But a lot of people don't like doing that because the trains don't run that often. And I knew they do run more trains now than they used to that day. And so they like to be tied to the Green Line. And I always also laugh. I'm like, well, and you know, because this is the city of Boston, we also have the Red Sox game at 11 a.m. that morning. Yeah, and it's the same train line.
Right. See, I think the commuter rail is the way to go because, you know, it's such an easy walk from I used to live right near the Wellesley Farms train station, and it's so easy to get to 16 from there, and it's such a pretty part of the course because we're near the Woodlawn train station. Is it, to me, in my mind, it's just a big piece of asphalt, the course right there, where you go over 90.
And there's not as many people that, you know, out on that course because, you know, it's mostly the, you know, the because it's school vacation week next week here. So it's mostly, you know, the families who live in around here. And so, you know, the, like I said, it's part of my tradition growing up. And so, you know, it tends to be a little less crowded earlier on in the course. But yeah, as soon as you get from like anywhere on the Green Line on, is forget it.
Just even having lived in Boston, it never occurred to me that that's why it's so crowded around, you know, near the hospital and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are you most excited about for the weekend? And what are, do you have any concerns about the weekend?
I love marathon weekend in Boston. You know, to be able to be ingrained in it in so many parts, working with Spalding's team and working as a volunteer for the BAA and running it myself, you know, I love it. It's, you know, the excitement has already started. It started a couple of weeks ago when, you know, the banners went up and you could start to see that buzz. You know, I think the concern that runners are going to have this weekend and that even the spectators are going to have is the weather. You know, the forecast right now is rain, and not just on Monday, but there's rain on Sunday as well, which, you know, kind of does put a damper on things. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to change anything, and people will still be out there. But, you know, there is that. And I think, you know, in the back of my head, I think, you know, I don't think it will, you know, I don't think it's anything would happen. But, you know, you always still kind of think in the back of your head, okay, sort of what are the other safety concerns? I think they've put a lot of things in place since 2013. And, you know, but you always still sort of, you know, still have to think. You never know what's going to happen, sort of.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's exciting. It's an exciting time. You know, the anniversary of One Boston Day, which has become sort of a day of service in the city, is Sunday. And so there's a lot of events that surround that as well, because the anniversary was actually 5 years ago on say. And so we're involved in a lot of events that surround that as well. And I think it's a time, you know, to reflect and also to see how far, like I was talking about earlier, sort of how far these individuals have come and you know, sort of just be part of everything that's going on.
So I have not heard of, you said it's called One Boston Day. I haven't heard of that.
Yeah.
Could we take a side journey and you tell us what that is?
Sure. So they started One Boston Day in 2014 as a way to sort of remember the anniversary. And so they really look at it as a day of service. And so they ask people to sort of do a kind deed, you know, whether that's buy a cup of coffee for somebody. They encourage the runners to donate their old sneakers to different charities who will take those sneakers. There's a lot of different events. There's a lot of blood drives that go on in the city that day. And so it's sort of just like a day to give back. A lot of the sports teams will visit the hospitals and visit the current patients who are, you know, at the different hospitals throughout Boston that day and do sort of different different good deeds and bring, you know, meals to the local firehouse or the police department. So they sort of encourage everybody to sort of pay it forward and do a good deed on that day. And it's sort of a way to, you know, remember what happened back in 2013, but also for this, a way for the city to heal.
That's a really cool, positive community effort.
Yeah, it really is.
So Suzanne, you've been volunteering at the expo for many years, and I'm curious, you said, you know, you were not going to run it again, and you did it in 2014 for the reason that you talked about, but do you ever feel wistful about when you're telling people about how to navigate the course and how to spectate and where to go eat? Do you ever say, hey, you know, I kind of want to do the Boston Marathon again?
Absolutely. Every year it comes up, and we did our long run with the team a couple weeks ago out on the course, and I actually ended up running some of the mileage with a couple of our team members just to sort of get out there and be part of it. As I'm running along, there was that twinge in, you know, in me being like, maybe I could do this again one day. And then I'm like, no. And it's funny. I actually, you know, as I rewind back, I've actually been volunteering with the BAA for even longer than the last 3 years. So the last 3 years I've been doing the information table just because day of, I really need to be with the team and the events that go around that. But prior to that, I volunteered at the finish line, and my parents actually volunteered just past the finish line where runners are getting their medals. And I volunteered with my parents there. And this was before I even ran. So this was back in like 2006, 2007, you know, before I even consider running any distance, really. And so I remember years ago saying to my mom, like, maybe one day I'll do this. You know, so it's really funny. So since then, I've run, my sister's run, my brother has run, my husband, my brother-in-law. So it's sort of become this family affair to be out there. So we don't have any family members out on the course this year. I'm trying to get my dad to do it maybe next year. So yeah, so, you know, it's been part of sort of my life for decades.
Nice. Well, you have, sounds like you're going to have a really wonderful extended weekend, and we'll be thinking of you.
Thank you. Yeah. And I wish all the runners the best of luck. You know, it's the biggest thing you can say is, you know, just enjoy it regardless if it's going to rain or be hot and sunny. Just enjoy the experience. It's really amazing.
It sure is. It sure is. The support that Boston residents and Boston area residents show for the marathoners is really just spectacular and uplifting. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you.
Next up is Andrea Hennigan, a mother of three in the Boston area. She's running for the American Liver Foundation in honor of her dad, who died of liver cancer 2 years ago. This is Andrea's seventh marathon, but her first Boston and the first one she's running for charity. It's great to have you on the podcast, Andrea.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, three kids, how old are they? And do you have a job outside of the home in addition to being a mom?
Yes, I have. My oldest child is Caroline. She's 11. And then I have a son, Cormac, who's 9. And my youngest daughter, Mairead, today is her 6th birthday.
Oh, very nice. Happy birthday, Mairead.
Thank you. And I do work outside the home. I'm a nurse. I'm a labor and delivery nurse.
Excellent. Oh, perfect.
Yeah. And I trust that as these women are pushing, you're being like, yeah, and when you get back to running, look up this thing called Another Mother Runner, right?
Well, we do talk about, you know, it being like a marathon and not a sprint. So I should put in the Mother Runner.
Yeah, you know. Thing there. We need to make like AMR scrubs or something like that.
Right.
So, Andrea, you have run seven marathons. This will be your seventh marathon, but your first Boston. Can you tell us about your running history and the other marathons you've run?
Sure. So I ran three marathons back in my early 20s. I ran my first one when I was a senior at Georgetown. I ran the Marine Corps Marathon and two others after I graduated from college. And then I kind of thought, you know, I was done with that, ran a bunch of 10Ks and halves. And a few years ago, I reunited with a college friend of mine and ended up going back and running two more Marine Corps. And my last one was the Newport Marathon.
Nice. So then tell us how you came to sign up to run Boston for a charity. And you must humble brag about your fundraising success.
Oh, thank you. Well, my kids and I go and cheer for Boston Marathon runners. And I would see all the charity, you know, shirts. And I thought, gosh, I would really like to do that someday because, you know, I don't really think there's any way I could qualify for Boston. Kudos to the ladies who can, but that is really fast. Mm-hmm. And I was intimidated by the fundraising. The BAA requires that charities ask their runners to raise $5,000, but many will ask you to raise more because they can. There's so many people who want to run. And I was really intimidated by that. It's a lot of money. But when I started to see the American Liver Foundation bibs and my dad had just died from liver cancer, I thought, you know, that's a charity I could really get behind. And then last summer, my oldest daughter wanted to raise money for a charity that would help people who had what her grandfather had, like the way you'll see kids doing lemonade stands and things like that. But she's very crafty. So she made keychains, key fobs, and sold them for $5 each. And at the end of the summer, she had raised $600 for the American Liver Foundation.
Wow.
That is a lot of key fobs. Now, I have to ask. So if I could do the math, you know, so that is that if she only charged $5 a piece, that would be 1,200 key fobs. Please tell me that some people like were like, oh, here, honey, here's a 20, keep the change, right?
Yeah, I think it was like 111 of them, and then some people threw in some extra.
Okay.
So it was a lot of sewing.
That is still a lot, but wow. She must have just been like a little, you know, production house.
She was. She was like, you know, and she loved it. She loved keeping track of her orders, and people donated a fabric to her and keeping track of all that. And at the end of the summer, we went to where the American Liver Foundation New England headquarters are to deliver her check. And I thought, you know, it really feels good to raise money for this organization. So I decided to follow her lead and go ahead and apply to be on the marathon team. So you have to fill out like an online application and then have a phone interview. And they selected me to be on their team. I committed to raising $7,500. And so far I've raised $10,900.
Wow.
And I have to say that, so when you emailed, when I put out the call for having guests, you said that you had raised $9,000. And so I'm so impressed that you continued pushing and have raised almost an additional $2,000 on top of that. So really, my hat is off to you. That's fantastic.
Oh, thank you. It has felt so good to be able to raise this money for them.
So, yeah. Andrea, I understand why raising that amount of money is intimidating. Like how, you know, I think to myself, well, how would I do that? So can you tell us about some of the ways that you you did that? You raised the money.
Sure. So I'm very lucky. I know some very kind and generous people. So I had a fundraising page and people made donations. I also had a raffle for tickets to a New England Patriots game. You know how people in New England love their sports teams. So I bought some tickets to a Patriots game that came with a tailgate package and a parking pass. And I sold them for $50 each and sold 100 tickets. So that was $5,000.
Wow.
And then I had a party at my house with Alice's Table, which is kind of like a paint night, except it's flower arranging. So they lead you through step by step and you make this pretty arrangement. And some friends came to that. That was really fun. And then Caroline made me some more key fobs, though.
So yes, good. Good. I was waiting to see where those would come into the picture.
Right.
Very good. I think you need to send us a... Do you have any pictures from the flower? I'm a huge flower person. I love flowers. Do you have any pictures of the flower arranging?
I think we might need
to put that into the... you need to send those. I think we might have to put those into the collage that you know, we promote the podcast with.
It's really fun. I did it another time and just learned a lot of like little tips and my flowers came out so pretty. And so then I talked to the hostess about having the fundraising party.
Nice. So given that you're a local, has it felt different to be training for Boston than one of the six previous marathons you've trained for? Or has it felt different because of the, you know, I assume you must think about your father a lot during your training?
Yes, you know, it has felt different in so many ways. And I think part of it is being from the area and knowing the, you know, what Marathon Monday is all about here. And part of it is that I've had the opportunity to train on the course, which the other ones that I ran, I didn't really do that. So to be really familiar with the course and those hills and everything. And then I have to say, being part of the Liver Foundation team has really been a different training experience. I've loved training for marathons, I think, for the reasons we all do, just the working towards a goal and doing something for yourself and having some time to do something for yourself. But this team aspect has been a totally different experience. Everybody is just so supportive. And I think because we're doing it to raise money for this cause, most of us have a connection to liver disease or liver cancer. There's so much support for both the running and just the personal support.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. It takes the connection to a deeper level.
Yes. Yeah.
So I you know, hear you saying that you were able to train on the course, and I have to say that's like such an advantage, because those hills, you know, if you just see them one time, you think, okay, they're not that bad. But if you're running at them at the end of a long run, it's a whole different story.
Yes, I think where they come in the race is the tricky part after all that downhill. And until I had the opportunity to practice on it, I don't think I really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. So you hadn't, before you started training for Boston, had you run much on the course, or was this kind of your first foray?
No, I used to live sort of near the end of the course, so I had seen that part before. But this was my first time running from Wellesley through the hills in Newton.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. And so I hear that the weather kind of sucked hard out there this year. So how did you handle training through the rough winter? And do you think winter will feel like it's over by Monday?
It's kind of nice out today. I think maybe spring is coming. And it was a cold winter at the beginning of January, and I did end up on the treadmill a few times there. The snow, we did have quite a bit of snow, but it melted fairly quickly. So I've done most of my training outside. I grew up on Cape Cod, and I did do two of my long training runs down there because there wasn't snow on the ground when we had snow around Boston.
Oh, that's right. I have to ask, where in Cape Cod?
Oh, Harwich.
Oh, okay. You know, our retreat this fall is in Falmouth. So
yes.
I'm like, ooh, Cape Cod. Ooh, okay.
Yes. And the third marathon I ever ran was the Cape Cod one. I think that's what you're doing with the retreat.
Oh, it is. Yeah. We're doing the because now they broke, I don't know if it was always this way, but they have the half marathon on Saturday. So all the retreat participants are doing that. And then the marathon and the marathon relay are on Sunday. So
that's great.
I have to say that it's funny you mentioned key fobs, because every year at the retreat, this is a total side note, that we have a welcome gift for the attendees, and that's part of my job to think it up and everything. And I'm like, oh, I totally want to make key fobs that and I would never, now I'm going to use that term, try to use it a couple times today at least, that I want to do, you know, like the total preppy with the webbing and then like some, I don't know, like whale ribbon and all that, but have like another mother runner spin to it and all that stuff. So now I'm thinking like, maybe I get Caroline to make them for us.
That's really cute.
Because we sell keychains in the Mother Runner store, but they're leather. And I asked our supplier, I'm like, oh, could you do that? You know, I have this whole scheme. And she's like, yeah, we can't do that.
No. Yeah,
I'm
no.
Like, oh, okay. So I don't know. So I might be back in touch to talk.
All right.
So Andrea, as we're looking ahead to Monday, what are you most excited about for the race? And also, what's your family's spectating plans?
Well, they're talking about a lot of rain right now, but yeah, I'm trying to ignore all that because who knows, it can change, right? So I think that might change sort of my family's, where they're going to be, but they will definitely be at the finish line and I'll be really excited to see them. So I can't wait for that. And I think, you know, I'm just so excited just to have the experience, despite the, you know, the weather or despite how long it takes me or or whatever, just to be running with the in the last wave with all the charity runners who are running for all kinds of different causes. I think it's going to be very inspiring.
Will you go to the starting line with your group?
They do have a bus for my group. I plan to meet them at the starting line, but I'm going to take a bus with a running club that's really close to where I live. It will allow me to get a little bit later start in the morning.
Nice.
Oh, that's so fun, because I was thinking like, you know, I wonder what locals do for getting out to the start, because, you know, you think like, oh, it's so awesome. It's like, you know, an 11:30 start. And that's like, yeah, but you got to be at the Commons at, I don't know, like seven or 7:30. Makes for a long day.
Yeah, that'll be really different. It's going to be a long day.
Yeah, it is also, I find it intriguing about Boston that, you know, when you're a runner of my speed, you finish, you know, kind of close, not, you know, kind of early dinner time almost. And I just remember like looking at, you know, when I finally hobbled back to my hotel after the first time, and it was starting to almost feel like the sun was starting to go down. I'm like, wait, what happened to the rest of the day? I don't understand.
Right. I know. I probably won't finish until around 4 o'clock. I would think I started 11:15. So it'll be like dinner time.
I know. It's different. It's different post-race fueling than usual after a marathon. There's no brunch involved.
Yeah, honestly, you know, speaking seriously, it does present the nutritional challenge the whole day, like the before and because you're basically running through lunch hour. If you think about how much you've eaten normally by the time 4 o'clock rolls around.
You know, for sure.
Like, and
two
meals and two snacks, and I'm already thinking about dinner.
I think that's definitely a challenge. And I've tried to, where all of my kids are in school now, I've tried to do some of my long runs, not that late, but, you know, late enough that I've been up for a few hours, gotten them off to school and everything, so I can kind of practice eating beforehand because it is really different.
That's so smart.
Yeah, it is. Because then it's like, okay, well, should I eat breakfast and then second breakfast, you know, pretend I'm a hobbit? Like, what should I be doing? Well, thank you, Andrea. We have enjoyed talking with you, and we'll be thinking about you on Monday.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
Last but not least is Carrie Cosnow, who will be running her first Boston Marathon on Monday. This mother of one and a teacher in South Carolina was a self-described middle-of-the-pack runner until after her 40th birthday, when she started incorporating speed work into her workouts and realized she could run fast. Welcome to the show, Carrie.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So you got to start by sharing your early memories of the Boston Marathon that you detailed in an email to me.
Yes. Well, I grew up in southern New Hampshire, but never really went to see the marathon. My parents are not runners. But one year we went down to Boston to see an ice skating show, and it just happened to be the day of the marathon. And so it was hours after the marathon had probably finished, but I saw all these people walking around in these weird Mylar blankets, and I had no idea what was going on. I was probably 10 or so. And my parents explained to me that the marathon had been that day. And I think I kind of understood what that meant, but I really had no concept of what running 26.2 miles really was.
And I also have to say that I love that Boston had, you know, like an Icecapades or whatever show that night, because one of the previous guests was like, oh yeah, and because it's Boston, we have to have a Red Sox game on Marathon Monday. And it's like, oh yeah, just throw in some more things. Throw in some figure skating. Let's go for it.
Everything happens in Boston on Patriots Day.
It does.
So Carrie, tell us about your evolution as a runner. Sarah just said you realized you could go fast when you started incorporating speed work into your workouts after you turned 40. So what was your first marathon, and tell us about how you chipped away at your time and ended up qualifying for Boston?
Yes. Well, my first marathon was in Cincinnati, and I had run some smaller races, but I hadn't started running until I was in my 20s. Never really thought about pushing myself. I just liked to go out and run long because I didn't have to go fast. And there's not as much pressure in a marathon as there is in a 5K or a 10K when you have to go really fast. And so I ran that first marathon, and I was a little over, I think it was about 4 hours, 15, something like that. And a few months later, I moved to France because that's where my husband is from. And I lived there for a few years and took advantage of the fact that I was over there to run some international marathons. So I ran Paris 6 days before our wedding. And I also ran Berlin, Barcelona, and Amsterdam. So those last two, Barcelona and Amsterdam, I finally broke 4 hours. And I finished in 3:55 and change on both of those. But it's funny because as I was training for all those, my husband, who would sometimes ride along on the bike, said I was like a metronome. It was 9 minutes, 17 seconds per mile, never slower, never faster. That's just my, that was my internal speed at the time, I guess. But then after having our son and slowly getting back into running a few years later, I think it was because I had a treadmill and I could just pop in a program where it would do all of the accelerating and hill work for me, that I thought, wow, I really, when I go out on my own, I can go faster because I've been working faster on the treadmill. So, and my husband had always said to me, you could go faster. You just have to try and you have to practice. And I think having some success at smaller races and, you know, getting an age category award, that pushed me too. And then I just decided to get really serious about it.
So I have to ask, I have often daydreamed about running the Paris Marathon.
Yes.
Tell us, let's take a little side journey and just kind of tell us like how it's different to run, you know, one of those races. And of those four that you mentioned, what one really stands out most in your mind?
Well, I think Paris has to, because I've lived and studied in Paris and it's the city that I know the best of all of them. Before the race starts, you're in a huge just sea of people. There were probably about 30,000 people that year. It was 2007. And you're just hanging out on the Champs-Élysées and just soaking it all in. And I have a feeling that, I'll be doing a lot of soaking it in on Monday as well. I think the fact that it's just the sheer number of people. I haven't been in such a big marathon in about 10 years, so that's exciting. But then anytime you do any big city marathon, you get to see the city in a way that you don't as a tourist. So running past those monuments, going into neighborhoods you wouldn't normally see, it's such a different perspective, and it goes by so much more slowly than if you were in a bus or something. It's a really special way to discover a city.
Oh, yeah, like I say, I daydream about it. So speaking of daydreaming, do you ever kind of, you know, think, oh, I wish I could turn back the clock and see and really have discovered your speed as a younger person to really kind of, you know, open it up and see what you could have done?
Wow. I don't think so. I was so focused on dance as a child and all through high school. I really had no interest in running at all when I was growing up. I didn't think I could do it because I think, like so many people, I started out super fast and then I couldn't maintain that for more than a minute or so. And then I think, oh my gosh, running's too hard. I can never do this. I know that I'm not at a level where I ever would have been able to be a professional. So I don't feel like I've missed out on a career that I could have had because I know that I'm not that caliber. But I've loved the whole journey that I've been on. And as I get older, because I just turned 43, I am more and more grateful every single time I get to go out and do this sport that I love so much.
Carrie, how old is your child?
He is about to be 8 in a month or so.
And remind us how you how and where you qualified for Boston.
Okay, so after my son was born in 2010, I did some smaller races and I did a couple half marathons. And then in 2015, I decided, all right, I'm going to go back and do a marathon, a full marathon again. And I did the Space Coast Marathon down in Cocoa, Florida, which is a fabulous event. And that went okay, but it wasn't spectacular. It was not a PR. But I decided that if I really wanted to improve and get a PR, and Boston was still not really a realistic dream for me. It was more of a pipe dream, like, oh, that would be so great, but I don't think it's going to happen. But I thought I really need to focus on it. So I changed my method of training and really focused on speed work, bought a book that took me through everything. So then in 2016, my training for the same marathon, Space Coast, I felt like I followed everything to a T, because I'm very much a type A personality. If I have a training plan, I'm going to stick to it no matter what. I was very fortunate. I stayed healthy. I did not get injured. And I really felt like I had given it all I had. And so on race day, there's a certain comfort in that. I think you toe the line knowing that there's nothing else that you could have done. And it was the first time that I ever ran with a pace team. And I think that had a lot to do with it too, because it took away some of the stress in the early miles of trying to monitor my pace, you know, because it's so easy to start out fast. I was able to stay in control of my pace in the early miles and then get some motivation in the later miles as well. But when I crossed the finish line, I knew that I had about a 6-minute buffer, faster than my qualifying time.
Nice.
And nice. I still have this very strong memory of thinking, oh my gosh, this is what it feels like to qualify for Boston. And it was just so exciting. And I can't believe, I mean, it's been a year and a half now that since I've done that. And I can't believe that it's finally here now. I was not at all emotional about Boston until the last few weeks. And now I'm reading all the books and looking at the history of it and watching the documentaries. And I just, it's so hard to put into words how excited I am to be part of this huge legacy. It's more than just 26.2 miles. It's being part of history.
Totally is. And when you go there, you'll really appreciate how the whole city really comes together and the incredible electric buzz that's around the expo and all the runners that are there doing the same thing you are and their families there to support them. It really is an incredibly exciting journey.
I mean, the crowds were, I mean, I just think that I've done New York. I've rode in the head of the Charles a number of times, and I just think there's really nothing like the spectators at Boston Marathon. It's just, oh my gosh, the support and the enthusiasm and their seeming deep knowledge of what is happening in front of their eyes is it's pretty spectacular.
And I mean, I have a friend that I went all through school with, and I don't think that I have seen her since we graduated from high school, and that was many, many years ago. And just before starting this podcast with you, I thought, I'm going to look at Facebook. And she sent me a message. She said, all right, I'll be out around Heartbreak Hill. I'll be looking for you. That's amazing. I mean, it's 20 years or more. We haven't seen each other. And yet she's going to be out there, not just for me, just for the whole experience. But
yeah,
be sure that I'm going to be looking for her and appreciating making that connection after all these years, because again, it's more than just a race. It's Boston.
Yeah, really exciting. So I'm curious about the Space Coast Marathon you ran and qualified in, and that's in Florida. That sounds to me like hot and humid and hard to run.
Yeah.
As does as you live in South Carolina, which also sounds hot and humid.
It is. Oh my goodness. It's fairly miserable to run in the summer.
That's good. Really good training.
It's like a sauna. Exactly. You know, I've run the Space Coast the past 3 years, and there are people around me who come from up north and they say, oh my gosh, it's horrible. And I'm thinking, this is not bad at all. It's beautiful.
Because what time of year is Space Coast? Is that like in December or something or no?
Sunday after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's really great. It starts out cool, and it does get kind of warm, but not unmanageably so.
That says the Southerner.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right, right. And I also love that before with one of the other guests, we were talking about like, oh, it's so tough to train for a spring marathon. You know, she lived in the Boston area and you're like, fall marathons, who would train for one of those?
Yeah. Well, I'm lucky because my husband is French, we go to France every other summer. So this past summer, I was running in France all summer and it was just gorgeous. The weather was cool and dry and I got to practice on some hills, which we don't have much of in South Carolina, at least in the part I'm from. So that was good as well.
How did you train for the hills for Boston? Did you do bridges?
Yes, that's exactly what we do is bridges. There's really nothing else that you can do. Treadmill can get you the uphills, but it doesn't help you with the downhills. And that's so important for Boston. So I have about a 9 mile loop around my downtown that takes me across two bridges. And so usually I'll do the loop and then end at one of the bridges and do my last 3-4 miles just going up and over, up and over.
Very smart. Very smart.
Wow. Wow. No parking garages for hills.
No.
Those always, with another mother runner over the years, and just hear, I remember the first time I heard that, I'm like, you do what? You do hill repeats at a parking garage?
Yeah, I never thought of that. But no, we don't have any parking garages, so just bridges. But it's beautiful. You can't beat it. I mean, it's so gorgeous.
Yes. So Carrie, in one of I think in your email, you said that this might be your only Boston. And I'm curious about why that is.
Well, just because it's a lot logistically. You know, I used to live in Maine, and too bad I didn't qualify when I lived in Maine because it would have been a lot easier. But just logistically, because we've turned this into a family vacation. We moved down to South Carolina 5 years ago and have not been back to Maine since. So we arrived yesterday and we're visiting old friends and making a week of it. Cause thank goodness this is my spring vacation, from my job, but it's a lot logistically and financially. And I could, but I think that probably next year, because I did qualify again last November, I'm just going to think that I'm making somebody else very happy who's going to have that spot next year. And maybe in another decade or so, we'll see. I'm not going to say never. And probably if you ask me on Monday night, I'll say, yeah, I'm definitely coming back next year. We'll see.
So that's good. You're up north. Do you feel like your blood's getting thicker and you're going to be ready for the weather on Monday?
No, it's freezing here.
I knew you'd say that.
I grew up in New Hampshire and I always said I will never live in New England again because I'm always cold. I love New England, except I can't handle the cold. So... Yeah, I've brought several different outfit choices, lots of layers, went to Goodwill and got some throwaway clothes for the starting line. But no, I know I'm going to be cold. I just worry about my family because they're going to be out and not moving like I am. So,
What's their plan for spectating?
Well, we don't have too much of a concrete plan yet. We still have a couple days to work it out. You know, when I was doing some of these European marathons, it was great because my husband and I, the night before, we'd sit down with the map and we would map out where he would be. I'd usually write it on my hand, mile 6, stay left, mile 12, stay right. And he would be there. But now with a point-to-point course and a 7-year-old in tow, it's not quite as easy. So we still need to finalize that plan. But I know that they'll be out there cheering for me. But I'm also very excited for them to see the front runners. I'm never going to see them, but they know what a huge fan I am of Shalane and of Dina and just everybody who's going to be there. So I'm excited that they're going to see them.
Yeah, well, that's very, very nice of you to be thinking about them as the race draws closer. So, well, we are very excited for you and the experience you're going to have on Monday. It sounds like you're really going to do a wonderful job of soaking it up and taking it in. So enjoy it.
I will. That is exactly what my goal is. People say, well, what kind of time do you want to do? I said, well, first of all, I don't know how I'm going to do on those hills. But second of all, I honestly don't care. It is all about the experience. This is my victory lap. After all that hard work, I'm here to just enjoy it.
That's an awesome attitude. Perfect. And hold on to that all day.
I'm going to try.
Yeah. So have a great race. And the same goes to everyone who's running or volunteering or spectating. Just have a really great time on Monday.
Thank you so much. And again, thank you to all of the volunteers who make this such a special experience, not just for the runners, but for all of the city of Boston and all of the people who come in to be part of it. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
Tish, we reached the end of our marathon recording session.
It was a marathon recording session. I feel a little tired, Sarah, and hungry.
Right. From your comments, I definitely know you must be hungry because, you know, you've missed at least a snack and perhaps a meal during this. But that was got me so excited to talk to those women and just really think back as they were talking, you know, kind of envision where they'll be in different spots in the hills and all that stuff. So I'm really glad we did this show.
Yeah, it's exciting. And I'll be following them along on Monday. And Sarah, I'm curious, does it make you want to run Boston again?
I really don't think I could qualify again. I don't know. I definitely feel I have a limited number of marathons left in me, physically, in terms of my body holding up. I don't know if you feel the same way. You seem particularly resilient, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I would like to personally. I would like to qualify for Boston, and I like having done Boston.
Yes.
But the actual running of it.
It's
a hard marathon. You know,
it is a really hard marathon. Thank you.
It's an iffy weather day. You go downhill for 16 miles, and then you go uphill. And you know, everybody there is really, really super fast, and so it's pretty challenging.
It is. It is.
Hats off to all these women who are doing it. Good for them.
Yes. And they have a very, very special event waiting for them, experience waiting for them on Monday. But better them than me is what I'm thinking right about now. So
you can just watch it on TV.
Right. Well, let's head on over and hear from Dimity in the Train Like a Mother corner.
Hello, everybody. It's Dimity here with your Train Like a Mother Club Corner. I am keeping with the Boston Marathon theme, but not the Boston Marathon, a marathon near Boston, actually, which happened a couple weeks ago. It was out in Salisbury, and it was a looped course, six loops of 4 miles, and completed by our very own Pat Brockman, who is a badass grandmother runner, if we ever knew one. Pat had a lot of difficulty, a couple injuries and other issues as she trained, and she finally got to the starting line of her first marathon, and she finished it doing awesome. And the best part is the part that I want to read, which is not her running time and how strong and capable she looked, but what happened at the finish line. So she says that I just have to make sure I jump in the right place here. My ever faithful BRF was there at the finish line with a Tiffany box I had requested. Ever since my friend Katie ran her Nike Women's Marathon in San Francisco in 2005 and got a Tiffany box presented to her by a handsome man at the end, I have dreamed of having a moment like that. Bo did not disappoint. And I believe her husband is Bo. Actually, I know it is. And there's this awesome picture of the two of them standing. She's holding up her box. She's holding up what looks like a beautiful silver pendant. And they've got their Run San Antonio shirts on. And just the smile and the accomplishment is coming through the picture. So congratulations, Pat, on your 26.2, on finally getting that Tiffany Marathon pendant that you've been looking for, and for everybody else who's getting it done during these crazy weather days of early April. I'll see y'all next week. Bye.
All right, folks, maybe all this talk of Boston has you thinking about the future. So if so, we would love if you'd consider joining us for a retreat in 2019. We are planning on having four, count them, four of them total, with two being the current retreat format that we do now. And registration not open yet for any of them, but want to get you contemplating them, particularly because now I've floated the idea that Tish might come to one of them. So further enticement. So we're going to have, we know for a fact that our traditional, quote unquote, traditional spring retreat is going to be in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, called by some the Portland of the Midwest. That's the first weekend in May 2 to 5, held in conjunction with the Eau Claire Marathon and Half Marathon. I'm headed to EC this year in a couple weeks for the marathon to work the expo and scout out restaurants and our home base hotel, see some fantastic mother runners there. I'm really excited for that trip. We're still deciding on the location for our fall retreat. If I was a betting woman, I would place the odds are good that we will go back to Cape Cod, but it's not set in stone. But we have landed on details of our first international retreat. It's going to be at Rancho La Puerta Fitness and Spa Resort in Mexico, just south of San Diego. The dates for that are February 2 to 6. It's going to be a smaller group event with a maximum of 20 guests. How do you say ooh la la in Spanish? Last but not least, we're working on plans for a nutrition-based retreat with Talam Club nutritionist Ellie Kempton. Most likely that'll be in Denver in April. So I hope all of these details have you pumped up. Please consider joining us for a retreat next year. Our podcast today was produced in Portland, Oregon by Alex Ward from Sounds Like Pictures. Many happy miles.